WikiLeaks has a lot in common with lightning. It can strike anywhere and doesn't discriminate. And when it does strike, organizations know they've been zapped good. Yet each cybersecurity loss gives or should give some insight into how to improve your defenses. With potential lessons learned from this latest case, we turn to Jeff Pollard, Principal Cybersecurity Analyst at Forrester Research. Jeff, good to have you on.
Good to be here.
What do we know about, if anything at this point, about how these documents might have been taken? If it's an insider, that's something entirely different than just someone hacking in from outside, correct?
Absolutely right. I think at the moment, there are certainly reports and speculation that it was an insider. When you look at the amount of information that was gathered and the type of information, it certainly leans more towards insider than outsider. Primarily because the dump, frankly, is so extensive, right? Typically, when an outsider comes in, at least initially, they're going to have a very targeted set of data or requirements that they're looking for, right, to complete their mission. Whereas an insider obviously is potentially able to take quite a bit more because they have, you know, authorization and access to the environment. So I think the size and the content certainly makes it seem like it's more of an insider, but that probably won't be one of those questions we know for sure until, you know, kind of the full investigation concludes and is made public if it is.
Now, if they did take code, that is lines of code that were written by the CIA, aren't in most organizations those types of files stored maybe differently from administrative files or even program files that are about what the code is being written for?
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. What you're describing is kind of the version control system, right, or the code repository, which is often, you know, where code is checked in, it's reviewed, it's tested, right? There's kind of extensive processes around that. And then there's the set of documentation that goes with the code. And the ticketing system that might also be used to work issues with the code. And so often you'll have kind of a version control system, you'll have a ticketing or a support system, and you know, you might also have a requirements document or a requirements system that might be some sort of wiki that's maintained by a separate group. And in this case, I think what you're seeing is that there's a fair amount of documentation and code and design documents across all of those, right? Again, kind of going to the extensive nature of the materials that have been released so far.
Could that give a clue as to the rank of the person that was going after this material and looks like hoarding it?
This is a person, right, that had access and authorization to get to the information. If this amount of information was only given to personnel of a certain rank, then that would obviously be a clue there.
But in general, organizations do have hierarchies for who can see what.
Absolutely. And certainly we would hope that an organization like the CIA is practicing that level of compartmentalization and secrecy that we know that they traditionally would operate with, right? So we certainly hope that's the case.
On the other hand, there could be some really good code jockeys that could hack their way up to a higher level of access that could exist anywhere.
Not only an insider with potential skills that allow them to, you know, potentially exploit an environment in the same way that an outsider would, but also certain privileged positions within information technology or even the security team. Think systems administrators and other folks, right? I mean, if you look at Edward Snowden as kind of the corollary to this, or potentially the example in comparison to this in terms of the access he had, it was the systems administrator. He wasn't specifically read in or participating in any of the particular programs that he leaked information on. He just happened to be in a privileged role inside the environment that, due to the nature of the work he did, gave him access not only to the systems that he needed to support, but also the data that was preserved on those systems. And that's how he was able to obtain so much of what he was able to obtain.
We're speaking with Jeff Pollard, a principal analyst at Forrester Research. Now, in releasing the code to tech companies, as Julian Assange said he was going to do, the idea was they could then beef up their protection in their encryption schemes against tools like this. What's your expectation of what they will actually do with this code?
Well, it starts a bit of a process at all of these manufacturers, right, where the technology is included. The first thing that they have to do is figure out if it works. There's kind of a process for that, right, internally. So they'll grab all of these tool sets, they'll check them in, and they'll begin to test them from a development and QA and support perspective. and determine if these tools and technologies work and exactly what mechanism that they are using to exploit that particular piece of technology, right? Then they ultimately will assign that a severity rank and have their software development teams and their product support teams begin to create patches for it that they have to test and then release. So it starts a bit of a scramble on both the vendor side as well as the customer of all these companies, right? So if you're an enterprise that has some of these devices inside their environment, whether it's an iPhone, whether it's a Samsung TV, whether it's another piece of infrastructure, you have to look at and understand exactly what that device is, if there's a patch available, and then insert that into either your change control process to deploy the patch as normal, or potentially make it an emergency change control and deploy it beforehand. So there's definitely a rattling of the normal, processes for both vendors and those vendors' customers if they find out that these tools are in fact successful, if they do have a vulnerability in their technology there and then have to create the patches for it.
And there's a third set of companies, which is the cybersecurity product vendors themselves, and they're affected differently than the people like Apple or Microsoft.
Absolutely. One of their reports and sets of research I worked on last year is called Your Security Products Aren't Secure, and we wrote that for our enterprise CISOs here at Forrester. And what we were looking at was ultimately the set of security products that had been discovered by organizations, that had vulnerabilities discovered by organizations like Google Project Zero and other private security researchers and even academic security researchers. And the particular danger there, right, is when we invest in a security technology, in many cases we're investing in it because we assume, right, or we know that the rest of our technology has a problem. It has a gap. It is deficient in security, right? So when I buy a firewall, when I buy antivirus, I'm buying those technologies because I know that someone could get into my network, or because perhaps my operating system itself has some attack surface to it. It can be exploited. And when our security products are actually the very things that are creating risk for us, when those are the technologies that actually have the biggest attack vector or the biggest attack surface, that's really concerning because you've actually turned to them to protect you. So what happens when the thing that you trust is actually what's betraying you? And I think that's a quandary the security industry in particular really has to handle, right? Because these are the technologies that we're turning to when all else
sure.
fails. And so when they're the one that has a problem, it's even worse for us.
So this is really operating then on two fronts. One is the basic cybersecurity protection, intrusion, monitoring front. And the other is what to do about crazy insiders that seem to wreak more and more havoc each time around.
Absolutely. In fact, when we talk to enterprise CISOs out there, and we collect the data that we collect in the form of our business sectographics, one of the things that we find consistently is that the average security operations team in most organizations is spending far more of their time dealing with issues related to insiders than they are issues related to nation-state entities attempting to breach their environment. Now, they're doing both. But what you absolutely tend to find is that insiders present a big problem to security teams. It could be a lost or stolen asset, right? So it could be a laptop stolen from a trunk or a phone left in a cab. That's one type, right? But security still has to intervene in those. Or it could be, as we're potentially talking about, a malicious insider that's actively engaged in espionage, whether that's corporate espionage or military espionage and spying. Either one of those is potentially valid, or it could be an activist, right? Someone that has some sort of moral issue with what the company's doing and has evidence of that or information about it that they'd like to leak, right? All of those things are potentially true, and those are the types of things that security teams have to spend most of their time dealing with. The biggest challenge there is it's a multi-competency problem. This is a problem that security and technology alone can't solve. You have to work with your legal team, your human resources team, your business unit leaders, colleagues in the executive group. And you really have to understand who has access to what, where does our data reside, what's most important to us, and what are the risks related to that. It's a really big problem.
I guess enterprise IT is a great business if it wasn't for all those users.
that does seem to be the way it works, doesn't it? Though I'm not as much of a technologist as I used to be, so I might have devolved to users, so I'm not sure if I can make that indictment anymore, but it definitely works that way.
Jeff Pollard is Principal Cybersecurity Analyst at Forrester Research. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
We'll post a link to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.